I'd like to share some reflection from partly from this past week, but also, of course, from other, I guess, past month. So, 10 days ago, as I was driving to Satisaranya to spend a couple of days and then drive back with Sister Narida to Ottawa to fly to Thunder Bay, I had a kind of a bit of anxiety coming from the work that I have to do. And knowing that I will spend 2 weeks here, so I'm a teacher and then I have to prepare my class for September, 2 new courses to design, blah blah blah, so a list of things. And I was just, so I don't get into the story of all I have to do, but I was just focusing on the sensations in the body and just the fear. Okay, there is fear. And then from that, so I just stay with, just contemplating fear. And then there was this thing like, well, the insight, I guess. Oh yeah, fear is just a signal. Fear is a signal. Okay. And then, all right, but what kind of signal? A signal of what? And then, okay, so I was just waiting. Yeah, okay, a signal, signal. Yeah, a signal. And so the answer was a signal that there is an emergency situation. Okay, an emergency situation. So, because I have a lot to do, supposedly. So, emergency situation. Okay, emergency situation. So, okay, so there is fear because there is the belief that there is an emergency situation right now that I have to address, of course, because it's an emergency, so I need to address it. But I can't address it because I'm going to have a river for 2 weeks. Right. So then there's these other things. Okay. So I'm not able to address this emergency situation. Okay. So then I realized that there were two objects, right, of fear. So the first one was that I find myself in an emergency situation, and the second was that I'm not able to respond to that emergency situation. Okay. And then I realized that, all this was just, oh, okay, but this is just life. This is not about my work. This is just life. Life is like that. This is just a metaphor, for life. Life is just an emergency situation. At least that's what we believe, because we're just talking about beliefs here. So we believe that life is just an emergency situation and that we are not able to respond to it, to cope with this emergency situation most of the time. Okay, so then, voila, so that's the beginning of some further reflections on fear and on survival. And of course, if it's on fear and survival, it implies the idea of self or the belief or the sense of self. I don't want to reify the self because, as we know, it doesn't exist. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a sense of self rather than a self. So, I'd like to start with this survival instinct, that is common, that we share with all the other animals, I guess. But maybe, I don't know, I don't remember my past lives as an animal, so I don't know whether the animals are aware of that survival instinct. Of course, they act, through that instinct. But we, human beings, we are aware of this instinct. So we have this injunction, survive, right? And but then, because we have to, so it's, you know, we should survive. Then we have also, coming from that injunction, survive, we have another injunction. In order to apply this first injunction, we have another injunction, be something. Be something. And for us, be something means also be someone. We have to be something in order to survive, right? Because first there is a thing that survives, or that, you know, should survive. And also for the second reason, that thing should be a kind of substance to be able to survive, right? So, and that's the more or less the definition of a thing. It is that it's something solid. It has various attributes, among them, you know, stability, solidity, substantiality. So if we don't have that substantiality, then we think that we won't be able to survive, right? So what do we do to give substance to maybe something that has no substance? So to give substance to that thing that is programmed, actually, that, you know, system that is programmed to survive, right? It's a biological program, survive. So to give substance to that thing, I'm going to call that a thing, but it's not a thing, actually, say a system. To give substance to that system, we create around it a sense of self, right? So the hypothesis that I'd like to explore would be that this desire to exist, right, the craving for existence, is actually an effect of this survival instinct, of this injunction, survive. Because this injunction, survive, produces another injunction, be something. And then from there, so we have this craving for existence, of this desire to exist, and then to be something, right? Descartes, a French philosopher from the 17th century, defines this human being as a thinking thing, a thinking thing. But of course, he thought that that was the truth, but that's another story. Okay, so how do we do to create or to produce that sense of self? It's quite difficult, actually, and we spend much of our life to try to create that sense of self. Why? Because if we have this in the first place, if there is that injunction, survive, that means that this system is something that is, by definition, fragile, right? Otherwise, why this injunction? So this is something that is fragile, and of course we are aware of that. That's why we spend so much time, you know, taking care of this body, and less, I guess, of the mind. Okay, so we think that there is something that needs to be preserved, right? And this is this life needs to be preserved. If it needs to be preserved, it's also because not only is there a sense of fragility, you know, we usually define any living being as finite, as limited, as fragile, etc. So there is this this awareness of fragility, and then there's also coming, you know, with this fragility, limitedness, a sense of threat, right? If we have to survive, it's because we are fragile, but it's because also we're threatened in one way or another, right? So the threat is within. There is an inner threat that is our own nature, you know, the fragility of this system. So that's the inner threat. But there's also, you know, outward threats, like we live a life, and here, for instance, in the wilderness, you know, we could encounter some wild animals. So there's also that kind of threat. External objects. But because we're we human beings, we are gregarious animals. That means that we live in community, and we need to live in community, actually. I teach philosophy, so I may, you know, quote here and there some philosophers. There's a philosopher from the 4th century BC named Aristotle. Aristotle says that to live outside the city, the polis, the city, or outside a community, we have to be a god or a beast, right? So most of us, we need other human beings. So, because we live in a community, in a society, and we no longer more or less live in nature, the threat in a community is different, right? And so there's what we could call a kind of social threat. That means that we have roles in society, we need to perform these roles, and so there's the judgment of others, and you know, all these beliefs about ourselves, self-definitions, are partly produced by the others, you know, in the community. So I'm going to the way we create that sense of self. So I take that the sense of self, or the so-called self, is a set of beliefs. We have countless beliefs about ourselves, about others, about the world, about, you know, countless beliefs, views, self-views, personality views. We have desires, emotions, etc. And we think that these beliefs, these desires, this liking, disliking, wanting, non-wanting, all that is what we are, right? Because we identify to these beliefs, to these desires. And of course, the process of identification to those beliefs, desires, are the way we create a sense of self. If there is no identification, to beliefs or to desires, when there is no identification, there is no sense of self. And because there is this identification to these beliefs, desires, etc., we are attached to them, right? We claim an ownership, and then they're dear to us, and whatever is dear to us, we don't want to lose. We don't want to lose them, right? So we are attached to those beliefs, desires, etc. But what is puzzling is that at the same time, we could notice, and we are aware of that, we change over time, right? The constant changing of this, well, what we call a personality. And what change is our beliefs, desires, right? We don't have the same desires when we are 20 years old and when we are 50, or, you know, and of course, beliefs change as well. So, say, if we would be able, and I think we're not really, but say we're able to compare our belief system when we are 20 and our belief system when we are 50, it's a total different belief system. Nonetheless, we think that the self that has this belief system when it was 20, and the self that has this belief system, totally different belief system, at 50, is the same, right? So what do we do to what do we do to state or to claim that this sense of self around, made out of this belief system, is the same as, you know, the one with another belief system? We tell a story, right? The story of our life, the story of our life. And to give an account of these constant changes that this system, this mind-body system, undergoes. So we tell a story, which is a kind of explanation, and that story allows this sense of self to keep going, to entertain the belief that there is a self and that there is a kind of continuity, right? So, okay, so that's partly, I mean, it's just a partial explanation of how we construct this sense or this idea of belief in a self. So this idea of a self is a kind of response to the injunction survive, right? Because this, as I said, this first injunction survive, as the second injunction, be something, or be, you know, someone. So here we are someone, or at least, you know, that's the belief. So the whole purpose of the belief in a self and the construct of a self is to respond to that injunction. And then this whole idea is caused by this survival instinct. Now, the thing, as we know, is to to let go of that sense of self, right? So to let go of this attachment to this idea of self, which is an attachment to existence. We don't want to lose this life. We're attached to this life, We don't want to lose this life. We are attached to it. Well, because we think that this is our life. This is my life. And we claim an ownership on this life. And we have a story around it. And we believe in that story, even if over years the story changes, and it changes constantly, actually. You know, this whole sense of self is just a work in progress, it seems. But, you know, we manage to think that it's not the case and that this sense of self is actually a substantial self. Okay. So we don't want to lose this life because this life is dear to us, because it's this is what we think we are. Okay. In truth, I mean, there's just a living process there, just a living process, or actually a set, a complex of various processes here, mental, physical, etc. processes. Okay, but now we're kind of doomed to have to give substance to all these processes. Because as we know, we are aware that the nature of any process is to appear and to disappear. So, if we think of this system as a process or, you know, a compound of various processes, it doesn't work. We just cannot apply this injunction, survive. It just doesn't work. Right? So, we need to give substance to this process, that is to deny the very fact of of the processes or that process itself. Okay, so I guess we have to try to find a solution to accept the non-substantiality of this living being, which is not a being, actually, it's just a process. A living being is just a wrong word, just because words fix processes. That's not the problem of language, but that's how it works. The language try to fix and to stabilize processes, the flux, and that's actually what we do when we tell the story of our life. We use words to solidify that which has absolutely no solidity, no stability, processes. Right, so words, and that's how we construct that sense of self, with words, using words. The self is like just a citadel, a castle of words. The problem is that words have wings, and they just, you know, fly away, and then we have again to bring words to construct again this castle, that is, you know, the self. And we do that. We do that all the times, right? All the times we tell stories. We have an experience and then we transform right away that experience that we just had into a story. Why do we do that? Because when we transform an experience with words, we solidify that experience. We make it exist. It ceases to be a process. There was that experience. The experience is gone. Gone. No. We don't want it to be gone. We want to have it. We want to have it so that this experience is part of our identity. right? So we create like that with these words, this whole identity. This whole identity is just made up by with words. That's all it is, right? Just a story. Words, that's all. So, okay, so it seems that that would be very easy to let go of that sense of self. We just let go of words, right? We stop telling stories. Their experiences, and we let them go. The experiences, you know, was lived, and it's gone. We don't build a story around it to solidify it. And then, you know, from time to time, we have to remember that experience just to give it substance to it, right? Or we try to, actually. And that's going to be part of the story of our life. Okay, so is it possible just to try to let go of this injunction, survive? Well, you know, it seems very difficult because if it is really a biological, you know, program, how is it possible to, or is it just possible to let go of an instinct that is so deeply rooted in any living creature? Well, it must be possible, because that's, you know, in a way, the promise of the Buddha is that we can be free. So it seems that it's possible to go beyond that survival instinct. And of course, if we go beyond that survival instinct, we go beyond fear. We become fearless. Or not we, but there is, you know, fearlessness. And fearlessness goes hand in hand with selflessness. And, you know, this is the goal of our practice. So if it is the goal of our practice, that must be possible to overcome this survival instinct, to let go of the injunction survive. Maybe there is a step. There is, okay, I just mentioned two injunctions. So the first is to survive, and the second is to be something, or to be someone. So in order to be someone, we have to tell stories, we have to use words. So the first thing would be just to let go of telling stories. We just let go of that. You know, we have experiences and we just let go. It's the past. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. We don't try to give substance to these experiences. What we have to do, so from this injunction, survive, to the second, be something or be someone, there's a causal link. Right? Survive causes the other injunction, be someone, something. So we have to cut that causal relationship between these two injunctions. So that'd be the you know, the first thing, which means, of course, to be aware that whenever we tell a story, it's to give substance to that which as none, right? So we have to be aware that when we try to preserve something, it's just in vain, because we try to preserve that which is by definition non-preservable, right? So we try to do something that is actually absolutely impossible, absolutely impossible. And by the way, of course it is impossible to apply this injunction, survive. Right? We're not immortal. It's just impossible. So we try to give substance to a living process, absolutely in vain. And and as we all know, to this enterprise of giving substance to the insubstantial produces an incredible amount of suffering. Right? It's just a cause of a mass of suffering to try to give substance to that which cannot have substance, to this, to the insubstantial, to processes. Right? We don't have that power to give substance to processes. Just impossible. And then, of course, around that vain enterprise, there is a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear because we know in the background, we know that it's not possible. We know that. We know that we won't survive. We know that. But even though we have that knowledge that we're mortal, nevertheless we try to survive in various ways, right? In different ways. So, okay. So one step would be to stop to use words and like as. You know, and tell stories. And of course, the other one, which is linked actually to the telling of stories, is the process of identification, right? Identification to experiences, identification to what happens to us, just what happens. So there's, telling stories and the process of identification and of ownership, you know, they're closely linked with one another. Okay, so if we're just a process, that means in a way, because, you know, as we all know, processes arise and disappear, that the nature of any process, we have to accept to be nothing. We have to accept to be empty, to let this process be and not try to solidify this this process. And just to realize that we cannot preserve the non-preservable, and maybe to realize that actually there is no need to survive, there is no need to be someone, if we realize that, then there is no fear, right? No need to survive, no need to be someone, therefore nothing to fear. So we have just to let go of that fear, and we could just relax, because we're going to die. We could just relax because we're just a fleeting process. And we could just let this process be and try as much as we can to accept emptiness and to stay as much as we can in emptiness. Beyond survival, there is the fullness of emptiness. It's there, just beyond survival, just if we let go these two injunctions. Thank you for your listening.